Welcome to OnClive On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. OnClive On Air is a podcast from OnClive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OnClive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we welcome Wendy Stock, MD, to discuss key recommendations from the ASH 2026 guidelines for frontline management of acute lymphoblastic leukemia in adolescents and young adults, which were published in February. Stock is the Anjuli Seth Nayak Professor of Medicine at University of Chicago Medicine and co-leader of the Clinical and Experimental Therapeutics Research Program at the University of Chicago Medicine Comprehensive Cancer Center in Illinois. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Stock explained how specialists, including hematologists, AYA psychosocial care specialists, pharmacists, methodologists, and patient representatives contributed to the formation of the ASH-AYA-ALL guidelines, discussed key recommendations in the guidelines supported by evidence, and detailed how the guidelines can aid in AYA-ALL management. Again, thank you, Dr. Stock, for joining us today to discuss the ASH-AYA-ALL guidelines that were published back in February 2026 and just some of the implications of what these could mean for practice and recommendations held within here. In general, I just wanted to start with your opinion on the AYA-ALL population as a whole. So what differentiates this population from the pediatric or the older adult populations in ALL?
Well, the young adult population is at an interesting crossroads in that they benefit from pediatric-based therapies, and that was shown two decades ago now. But the problem has been that it's been tough to administer these regimens to a young adult population. The reason that older adults are not really included in these guidelines is that the toxicity of the treatment increases with each, pretty much every year of life. And so over the age of 50, 55, these guidelines are completely not useful because the tolerability of the regimen is not feasible in that population. So our goal was to try to focus on proving or in the best way possible using very rigorous systematic reviews that young adults do benefit from the pediatric approach, which they do, and survival is better, and every other parameter of assessment is better. Event-free, disease-free survivals are better with a pediatric regimen. The challenge is how best to provide those regimens in a way that's both tolerable and successful for these young adults.
Definitely super important. And again, thank you for that overview to get us started. And before we dive into some of those recommendations for these pediatric-inspired regimens, you mentioned obviously the review and the evidence used to generate these guidelines. Could you just provide a little bit more background on, you know, how this consensus guidelines came together, the experts involved in what you and your colleagues just kind of looked at?
Yeah, these guidelines are based on rigorous guideline recommendation foundation. And there's a methods team that is engaged by the American Society of Hematology for these guidelines to provide the rigorous statistical underpinnings of the guidelines. And the members of the group who provided the guidelines, who came together to form these guidelines, was a group of investigators from all over the world, actually, including patient advocates, including social workers, including pharmacists, PharmDs, and clinicians. So it's a broad swath of people who provide care, both academic and community-based hematologist oncologists. And as I mentioned, the other crucial supportive care people.
Excellent. Perfect. Thank you for all that background as well. Turning to the guidelines, just where did you and colleagues land in terms of utilizing these pediatric-inspired asparaginase-containing regimens? What are some of the supportive care and management recommendations for patients who are receiving these asparaginase-containing regimens?
I mean, the guidelines tries to address issues of premedication, issues of dosing, issues of toxicity management, and alternative approaches for hypersensitivity reactions, anaphylactic reactions. All of these things are covered to the extent that we could provide firm recommendations based on the available data. One of the problems for all of these questions that we posed, all of which are relevant to the young adult population, is that the amount of data that has been generated is limited in many cases for a given question. And therefore, the recommendations were only given if sufficient data existed to make a recommendation. And where we couldn't, we discuss why we could not provide a recommendation, a firm recommendation, but do give some nevertheless background information on how those decisions were reached and data that were used to generate either an opinion or a non-guideline recommendation.
I know another point that was mentioned within the guidelines is the use of allotransplant and just, you know, defining the timing and the role for that. So, you know, within the AYA population, what is the current view on, you know, where this might be appropriate and how high-risk features might affect the timing of allotransplant for patients with ALL?
Well, in general, using a pediatric-based regimen, the guidelines have come up with a recommendation not to necessarily proceed to an allogeneic transplant in first remission. But that is based largely upon limited data in the sense that there are not randomized studies to completely accurately assess this question. We do not recommend allotransplant in first remission in general, but caveats include certain maybe high-risk biological subsets and the predication that minimal residual disease assessment is a very crucial factor in determining whether or not to proceed or not proceed with an allogeneic transplant in first remission.
What is the current view on the role of targeted therapies and just what other additional data and evidence further support, you know, best where to utilize these agents?
Yeah, well, that goes into the issue. The one agent that has been approved in the setting of frontline therapy in terms of targeted agents, in terms of antibody-based therapy, is blinatumomab, which is a CD19 T-cell engager. A bispecific T-cell engager. It's been shown that blinatumomab in both younger and an older adult population provides benefit for both event-free and overall survival and is recommended both in the MRD negative, in the patients who achieve MRD negativity, and the patients who are persistently MRD positive. Those are the patients where after administration of such an agent, may then be recommended to proceed with an allotransplant. But blinatumomab is now being routinely incorporated, and the guidelines provide recommendations about how and where and when to potentially administer this targeted antibody. Other targeted antibodies are under review, but there is no specific recommendation for or against any other specific agent, simply because the data do not exist yet to recommend or not to recommend.
And certainly, as you alluded to before, you know, these guidelines feature recommendations that you can support with evidence right now. So, you know, turning to those gaps, so what areas of, you know, are you still looking for more data, more evidence to further support and give some more firm recommendations within this AYA population?
Well, I think one of the biggest questions and the focus probably of the next generation of trials will be how much and what targeted therapies to incorporate into frontline therapy, whether or not the incorporation, importantly, of these new agents allows us to reduce some of the intensive chemotherapy that we administer and potentially shorten either the duration of the therapy and or the intensity of the therapy. And those are big questions to which we don't have an answer, but the next generation of trials will hopefully begin to address those issues. And then the guidelines, which are a living document, will be amended and revised as additional information comes forward. Of course, one of the major goals of these guidelines is not only to improve survival in these patients, which of course is our primary goal, but it's also to improve quality of life during and following treatment to avoid long-term toxicities, to avoid infertility, and to provide these patients with the underpinnings to move forward with a productive, healthy, and toxicity-free life moving forward.
Certainly, always important factors to consider. And that leads perfectly to my final question, which, based on having these guidelines now published, what would kind of be your main message for colleagues in terms of how they should be utilizing them? How can they supplement and complement some of the evidence that's driving some of their treatment decision in practice right now?
The guidelines are issued with a very, very helpful and informative slide set that reviews some of the major recommendations in a case-based format, which might be very useful to clinicians. And I think the guidelines in general provide a large amount of statistically sound data upon which treatment approaches can be confidently used. They're not perfect simply because we haven't had the ability to have a lot of randomized studies, which strengthens any kind of recommendation. But we do feel very confident that the recommendations we give are firmly based in evidence and also with the nuance of discussion given by this broad swath of committed investigators and to the effort to improve the lives of our young adults with acute lymphoblastic leukemia.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive. And follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.